why is it so easy, apparently, for someone to go into a situation where they become an object and they become devalued, and for them to internalize that and agree with it?
Well, it's a very, very strong psychic process, and it has to do with the fundamental need we all have for an identity. So when there is, you know, the most important question that we can ever ask is, who am I? And you can't stop answering that question, actually. Your feelings are telling you all the time who you are. Oh, I'm stupid, you know, oh, I'm late, you know. All the time you're getting answers to this question, who am I? You can't stop it because you've got a self-reflective brain. So when you want to not identify with something, when you want to, for example, disidentify from certain values as a group or as an individual, you practice the art of disowning, which is a dissociative art. It means, you know, it's a very useful function because you can, in times of danger, you have to disown, you have to dissociate from a whole lot of things, like your emotions. You have to just act, for example. So the brain has this capacity to do it. But so we can disown and deny a certain identity by focusing only on the good things, the ones that we like, the ones that we value, like, I'm independent, I'm not dependent. Now, the problem is that the psyche is absolutely very, very ecological. Nothing is ever thrown away. So if I am the one who is independent, or if I am the one who I'm the one who is strong, then somewhere the dependent one, the vulnerability, it has to pop up somewhere. So you get the situation, for example, in a marriage, if one person won't acknowledge their vulnerability, the other one becomes terribly, terribly vulnerable. And this happens not only in pairs of people, but it happens in groups. So if you have a whole part of society saying, we are not savage, we are not emotional, we are not feminine, we are not vulnerable, such as the Rational Man Project, that I'm talking about in my view on the entitlement illusion, then you have another section of the population who inevitably picks that up. And is this? It goes hand in hand with the structure of the society. And so as long as you have your elites disowning, dissociating from various qualities, you are going to have another section of society picking them up. And I think this is what's happened in Britain, and it's very difficult to emerge from that, because then we've normalised it.
That is my last question. That makes my last question. If we have an elite that's educated to be dissociated, to compartmentalise, and to saw off a part of their personality, and we have an underclass that's educated to be a good underclass, and that's completely internalised and appears to be part of your personality, and you don't want to lose your personality because it's you, and what would happen without it? How do you change it? Because it's sort of macro and micro. How would you conceivably change that, particularly when the people in charge, the one thing they don't want is change, because it's terrifying?
Yes. That's right. Well, you know, what they did in the end of the 18th century in France is they took their elites and they cut their heads off. You know, so and
people still love
it. You know, it's not a bad metaphor. You see, you think you have to do something to the heads of the elites in order to free the rest of the population. I think you do. I think you do, and I think you have to start there. I think you have to start. You do have to start in the direction things go, in this top-down way. So we do have to. We really do have to change the education system. That's a fundamental thing for me, and because that's where it all starts. Because the educational system is our production line of human beings. our production line of attitudes, our production line of mindsets. You really have to start there. And you don't start in this Gobian way of just reintroducing more left hemisphere tasks for children. That won't work. And we could, if we could scrap and rebuild the education system, we could over time develop a different society. That's completely clear. And we've got the facilities to do it. We've got great teachers. We've got wonderful buildings. All these schools are. We could get rid of boarding altogether, except for 16-year-olds. Then we could send everyone to Eton and have a couple of years in sixth form college in all these marvelous country houses, which are all over the country, and see what happened.
Because this is, I mean, this isn't, obviously, people at home, if we broadcast that, we were going, no, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But obviously, during World War II, from 39 to 45,
Yeah. There
was a huge difference in the way we perceived ourselves and the way the newspapers talked about
us. Absolutely.
And we would meet people from all kinds of different walks of life. And when you came out of that, people actually had been re-educated, and the result was that we got a welfare state.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, how long do you think it would actually take?
How long would it take? Well, you know, I'm a psychohistorian, not a futurist. but you're right. You know, when we in the Second World War, we really realised the crisis, and we really restructured our society. Actually, if you talk to some people. Apart from, of course, the death and the suffering, some people had the time of their lives in the Second World War. My mother did, for example, because, you know, women were allowed to drive trucks, etc. and the world didn't fall apart, you know, actually. And we had this extraordinary kind of national unity we created out of the Second World War, which, you know, has run out now, of course. But I don't think it's as long a process as we might fear. I think when an idea really begins to bite, it can go rather fast. But we are very fearful of change, especially on the internal level. We seem to be coping with all this technological change remarkably well, which means that we are able to deal with change. You know, I think we have to value ourselves more as human beings and as resources for the future. I think that's very, very important. So I can't really answer your question.
I mean, actually, are we? I know it's not your area, but I mean, are we dealing with the technology? I don't know that they keep being so racist because it's something new and people are scared of it, but. This idea that up to a point the avalanche of information now you can work at home, so we'll pay you yes and we'll make you flexible. There is a downside as well to this enormous change because it's being incorporated into the processing.
Of course, but actually the human beings are naturally afraid of the future, afraid of the unknown, and cleave to the familiar. But one of the things that the technological revolution has done is shown us, although, you know, I have lots of criticisms about it, but it has shown us that we can embrace a world which was unimaginable. You know, 20 years ago, we could not have imagined that we would have all been walking down the streets looking into our little screens and talking to someone who wasn't there. Insane, but we've adapted to that. We've adapted very fast. We're very, very adaptable. Human beings are incredibly adaptable. That's one of the problems. You send a child away to boarding school, he'll adapt to those conditions very, very fast, and he'll adapt himself. Now we can use the same process, but for a better end, actually.
Wonderful.